Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you today in digest format, CQ Magazine, for the month of September 2010. CQ is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The editor is Richard S. Mawson. Richard's call is W2VU. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hemp may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyhemp@courage.org. The website, www.handyhemp.org. We'll begin today in Ham Radio News. Federal Communications Commission permits ham-employees to operate in drills. Moving with unaccustomed speed, the FCC adopted a report and order on July 14, allowing hams who are employed by both government agencies and non-government agencies, such as hospitals, to participate in emergency and disaster drills on behalf of their employers. The rule was based on a Notice of Proposed Rule Change, WP10-72, issued this past March. In response to petitions arising from a strict interpretation by the FCC's Enforcement Bureau of the prohibition on amateurs communicating on behalf of their employers, the decision came just more than a month after the reply comment deadline. The ruling added a new paragraph in Section 97.113 sub A, sub 3 of the FCC rules, which reads as follows. I. A station licensee or control station operator may participate on behalf of an employer in an emergency preparedness or disaster readiness test or drill, limited to the duration and scope of such drill or test, and operational testing immediately prior to such test or drill. Tests or drills that are not government-sponsored are limited to a total time of 1 hour per week, except that no more than twice in any calendar year they may be conducted for a period not to exceed 72 hours. The new rule becomes effective upon publication of the Federal Register. Now our next news piece, Appeals Court overturns FCC indecency rule. The FCC's indecency standards have been left in limbo by a federal appeals court. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit ruled unanimously in July that the FCC could not legally fine broadcasters for, quoting, fleeting expletives that may make their way onto the air during live broadcasts. The FCC had tightened its rule after singer Janet Jackson's infamous robe malfunction during the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show and had issued fines to other broadcasters when various entertainers said naughty words during awards programs. The court ruled that the commission's rules went too far and violated the First Amendment, creating a, quote, chilling effect, close quote. The judges made a point of saying that they were not questioning the FCC's authority to regulate broadcast standards, only that the current regulations did not pass constitutional muster. The ruling is significant for hams as well as broadcasters because the FCC generally applies its indecency standards for broadcasters in amateur enforcement cases as well. Moving along now, Obama promotes national broadband plan. President Obama has committed the federal government to finding and freeing up 500 megahertz of government and commercial spectrum over the next 10 years to help accommodate the anticipated growth of mobile broadband services. The president's plan, which is based on the FCC's National Broadband Plan, would require congressional approval. UHF and microwave amateur allocations could be affected, as most ham bands above 225 megahertz are shared with and secondary to government users. Newsline reports that fierce competition to the plan is expected from TV station owners who feel that giving up an additional spectrum, they already gave up a lot in the switch to digital TV last year, would compromise their ability to transmit multiple programs simultaneously and to provide expanded mobile services themselves. Here's some good news. Number of new hams continues to grow. The American Radio Relay League, the ARRL, reports that more than 18,000 new amateur radio licenses were issued in the first half of 2010, an increase of nearly 8.5% over the same period last year. The number of licenses issued has climbed significantly each year since 2006, when just over 21,000 newcomers joined our ranks. Last year saw more than 30,000 new licenses issued. Nearly 125,000 new ham licenses have been issued since the beginning of 2006. The total number of licensees as of the end of June of this year, according to the ARRL, was 694,346. The Russian team wins WRTC. The 2010 running of the World Radio Sport Team Championships, the acronym WRTC, has been won by Russian hams. Two call signs, RW1AC and RA1AIP, operating R32F in the competition held in July in Moscow. According to the ARRL letter, the two hams from the host country won the gold medal, with Estonian hams ES5TV and ES2RR operating R3A, taking home the silver, and Americans N6MJ and KL9A taking bronze. 48 teams competed in the event, which is held every 4 years. One more piece here in the news line. France rules D-Star illegal. New Zealand investigating. The French government's telecommunications agency has ruled that hams in France and the French territories may not use D-Star, the digital voice and data mode that is becoming popular with amateurs worldwide. According to Newsline, the agency ruled the mode illegal because it can be used to connect ham stations to the internet, which is not permitted in France, and because it feels the proprietary digital voice encoder is in violation of the country's open standards policy. French hams say the ruling denies them, quoting, the fundamental right to access the internet, close quote, guaranteed by the European Union, and plan to petition the European Parliament to go to bat on their behalf with the government of France. Meanwhile, New Zealand's regulatory agency is looking into whether D-Star and other internet-linked radio systems, such as IRLP and Echolink, fit into that country's current TAM regulations. Apparently, the concerns there relate to unattended transmitters and unlicensed digipeaters, particularly regarding APRS, and whether these modes permit foreign amateurs to operate a New Zealand-based ham station without the agency's specific permission. And folks, there is additional and updated news always available on the Ham Radio news page of the CQ website, at www.cq-amateur-radio.com. Let's go now to our first article in the September 2010 issue of CQ Magazine. It's titled, Operate Your HF Radio at Home from Anywhere with Your Smartphone. The author, Bill Kearns, called WB6JAR. Last year, WB6JAR showed us how to remotely control a ham rig with a cell phone and a laptop computer. Now, he has it all together for complete remote control and operation with a single smartphone. This article is a follow-up of the author's piece published in October 2009's issue of CQ Magazine entitled, Your Next HF Mobile Rig May Be Your Cell Phone. In that article, I described how to use an ordinary cell phone to call and to access your HF radio at home. At that time, I was using a laptop to control all the radio functions. I only briefly touched on the smartphone aspect of remote radio control because at that time there actually was only one application that did this, and it was written for the Windows mobile platform. I'm happy to inform you that this is no longer the case, so read on. Try to imagine using your iPhone, iPod, Touch, or almost any smartphone to access and operate your HF radio at your home while you are away from home, just as if you were sitting right there in front of it. Wouldn't this be the absolute ultimate? Think of it. You can now carry your complete HF kilowatt home station around in your shirt pocket. Ham radio remote control and access such as this is now possible, and it literally brings contesting, DXing, and general rec to hamming up to a whole new level. First, a little background history. Controlling amateur radios with computers has been with us for quite a long time now. It all started with a few simple DOS, DOS-based, one-page logging programs, and has now grown to several full-featured total station rig control programs that literally do it all, not excluding the software-defined radios. When the internet came along, remotely operating and controlling your amateur radio station from your computer at the office or from a hotel room while away on business became a viable option for many hams. The next obvious, logical step is to operate mobile. When I say operate mobile, I am not referring to vehicle-mounted 100-watt HF mobile radios feeding large screwdriver antennas. I am really talking about remote-controlled mobile. In other words, literally controlling and operating the amateur radio station at your home while you are away from home and from your mobile. And now you can do it using only your smartphone. Here's an example. Previously, while driving my vehicle, I had been doing remote radio control and full radio operation with a dash-mounted mini laptop with internet air card while using my plain vanilla cell phone for the bidirectional audio. However, I wanted more. Carrying around the laptop with the air card seemed redundant when I already had full internet access on my Motorola i465 cell phone. Thus, I thought, why couldn't I just eliminate the laptop and do everything with my so-called smartphone? In essence, if this could be achieved, I would have the ultimate wireless mic. Initially, I searched for existing applications or apps that may already do this. I was ready to change phones and carriers if I had to. Any ham radio control apps for the iPhone or Android would have been ideal, but after a thorough investigation, I found out they just didn't exist. Besides, I already had the Motorola i465, and I was happy with my unlimited minutes, low-cost Boost mobile account. In addition, I really needed the Direct Connect feature on my phone for my employer, so I really did not want to change phones and carriers. With smartphones becoming more and more popular, I figured someday eventually a programmer would write some sort of radio control program for the smartphone. The real question was which smartphone, which operating system or platform would he write it for, which carrier? There are now a plethora of smartphones on the market, in addition to mine, with at least 5 or 6 different operating systems and several carriers. Writing a program that would only work on some smartphones and not all smartphones would not be cool. It was obvious to me that what was really needed was a program or app, an application, that would work on all phones, all operating systems, and with all carriers. It just seemed to be an impossible task with no easy solution. I am not a code writer, but I had this great idea and really nowhere really to go with it. I was about to throw in the towel and give up when I stumbled on a solution to this problem while using my Echolink link station. Jonathan Taylor, K1FRD, the author of Echolink, has an Echolink web control page built into the Echolink program. This web control page can easily be accessed from any computer anywhere. One of the key features of this web control page is Send ID Now. The feature keys up the link radio and sends out your Echolink ID string in CW or pre-recorded voice. Neat. Therefore, I figured if Jonathan's Echolink software has a web control page that can actually key up my radio on command, my question was, could a similar page be written for one of the total station control programs, such as maybe TRX Manager? If this actually was the case, it means that one software app could do it all, and do it all with all phones, on all platforms or operating systems, and with all carriers. Apparently, all I had to do was to ask. Laurent Labouré, call sign F60EX, the author of a TRX Manager, monitors and often posts on the TRX Manager Yahoo group, where he is easily accessible. Also, he is a very aggressive software author and is continuously striving to improve TRX Manager. He listens to all suggestions from members of the Yahoo group for input and ideas on improving his software. It took Laurent just a few days from the time I first contacted him about modifying his software until he had released the final working version. I must admit that the result of Laurent's efforts was much more than I expected. The final web server he wrote into TRX Manager works flawlessly. With your smartphone link to the new TRX Manager web server, all frequencies and modes are easily changed. You can also easily compose and send CW macro, and among many other features, you can also have access to the DX cluster. Any smartphone simply needs to have the ability to bring up a web browser to do all of this. In addition, you can easily program your favorite frequencies into your smartphone by editing and then saving the URL string as a bookmark. In conclusion, I should add that some newer cars have an AUX, A-U-X, auxiliary port on the AM/FM radio. This is the perfect connection for the iPhone, iPod, or other similar devices to make use of the built-in speakers in your car. Another side benefit to this unique mobile setup is that there is absolutely no RFI, radio frequency interference, or other radio installation problems to be dealt with. To fully utilize these new features, you must purchase the registered version of TRX Manager. The TRX Manager website can be found at www.trx-manager.com. One final note. At present, I am working on using the cell phone DTMF tones for true push-to-talk as an alternative to totally relying on the radio's Fox feature to key and unkey the radio. To learn more about this, enter my call sign, which is WB6JAR, Whiskey Bravo 6 Juliet Alpha Romeo, on www.qrz.com. And then follow the instructions to get to my Facebook page for all the latest updates and improvements for cell phone hamming. Folks, that completes the article authored by Bill Kearns. He spells his last name K-E-A-R-N-S. Bill's call again is WB6J-A-R. Next up on our digest report, results of the 2009 CQ Worldwide DX CW Contest. Yes, I did say 2009, even though we're talking September 2010. That's the way it works in some of these huge contests, folks. If you've listened to me on a regular basis, you know that CQ is by far the most active of the communication magazines to post and have contests, which are one of the favorite things in amateur or ham radio. But it also encompasses the use of quite a few pages of information and long, detailed call sign lists and such as that. So I've taken up the position of just giving you the author's information regarding the contest results on somewhat of an introductory basis, and then invite you to look at the article with someone's help if you can't read it for yourself, to see if you or somebody you knew or were interested in made a huge list. The author of this article is Bob Cox, C-O-X. His call is K-3-E-S-T, K Kilo 3 Echo Sierra Tango. Expanded results on the web. First, an editor's note. Having more logs than ever before submitted for the CQ Worldwide CW contest is wonderful, but it does put a squeeze on space. In order to assure that the efforts of all entrants are recognized through the publication of complete line scores, certain other elements of our contest reporting have been moved to the CQ website. So please visit the CQWWDX contest page. You just follow the communications link on the internet, www.cq-amateur-radio.com for QRM. Expanded. Top scores, listings, and more. And thanks for being part of the world's largest participation sporting event. The editor's note is signed by W2VU, Richard Mawson. Now for the text. What happens when the sun just won't cooperate? Enter the CQ Worldwide CW contest. CW folks is continuous wave, or Morse code, and help propagation improve. As Papa Alpha 6 Oscar India commented, "Great show again. I worked the world with a simple dipole and 40 watts, sunspots or no sunspots. As long as the CQ Worldwide is running, we can have a lot of fun." Martin, Victor Kilo 7 Golf November, had this to add, "Bands are dead and then the contest comes along and lots of signals. Do we make our own propagation?" Once you listen to the contest, you will be pulled into the fun. Victor Alpha 7 Hotel Zulu said, "Great contest. I started out just wanting to work a few stations, but got caught up in the fun. Too bad it's over now. It was a lot of fun." The CQ Worldwide contests are a sure way for new contesters to learn conditions and skills very rapidly. Bravo Golf 4 Echo Zulu Uniform said, "It was my first ham contest and looks like some kind of rehearsal for more. I used my FT817 with 4.5 to 5 watt output, a buddy pole set up at the edge of my balcony, and a retired straight key that used to be military equipment. The score is not exciting, but the experience really was." Finally, Nigel, G3TXF Golf 3 Tango X-Ray Fox, sums up all our feelings. "Who would ever deliberately miss CQ Worldwide CW? The best CW contest on the planet." As has been mentioned before, the CQ Worldwide is a fantastic competition which brings out the best in amateur radio. Teamwork, station construction, antenna design, propagation knowledge, and operating skills. Just turn on your radio and you can join in the fun. Once you listen to the bands during the CQ Worldwide, you will be hooked. You can be guaranteed to have a good time. CW is alive and well in contesting. Presented in these results are the efforts of the entrants. Read on to see how you and your friends ended up. Everyone who operated the CQ Worldwide CW in 2009 was a winner. And then the article, folks, goes on to define all the different major categories such as high power, QRP, which is low power, etc., assisted, multi-single, multi-two, multi-multi, team contesting. It's really quite a remarkable report. Talks about the clubs, the different records that were set, and special mentions as well. The article begins on page 16 of September 2010, CQ Magazine, and concludes many pages afterwards with the complete listing, as accurately compiled as possible. So the final line scores you see here in CQ Magazines are the product of a lot of work. With your help and our bookkeeping, we hope the results are as accurate as possible. We use many log checking tools and data sources to certify the winners. This issue of CQ Magazine goes on to detail in more pictures and commentary the 2010 Dayton Hamvention Safari Part 2. The information here is offered by John Wood, call WV5J. As you may know, if you follow the listening on these recordings over the years, the Dayton Hamvention is probably, without a doubt, the largest amateur radio convention, so to speak, or show, trade show, if you will, that is made available to anybody. And having said that, anybody who is anybody in ham radio usually goes, no matter what part of the world they are from, to Dayton, Ohio. Well, that's usually in May. And then for several months afterwards, as again today exemplifies in this issue of the September 2010 CQ magazine, the material that was exposed at this convention, made available for sale or just for show, continues to be explained in detail. Again, as I say before, you'd have to go and really look at it or have someone explain it to you, because it's a very, very lengthy part of the magazine. It begins on page 32 of the September 2010. Well, I think we'll change the pace now and go to public service commentary by Richard Fisher, KI6SN. The title, Worst to First, How Hall County Amateurs Turned MCOM Around. The director of the Emergency Management Association of Georgia gave Michael Crowder, Alpha Alpha 4 Bravo Alpha, a daunting task when he took the reins of Hall County Amateur Radio Emergency Service. You have 90 days to turn your group around, or we'll dissolve our memorandum of understanding. With just 14 members and things in a bit of a disarray, Crowder knew Hall County ARITS, based in Gainesville, needed to replace a lack of cohesiveness with a sense of direction and a forward-looking plan that would grow membership on the fundamental MCOM foundation, and in a hurry. The following is a quote. A few months later, Crowder said, the EMAG director nominated us for the 2009 Jack Hobbs Award for Excellence in Amateur Radio, an honor Hall County ARITS would go on to win, with Emergency Coordinator Crowder and Assistant Emergency Coordinator Margaret L. Shockley, call KJ4EZQ, accepting the honor on behalf of the team at an EMAG awards banquet. He continues, I went from no active AECs, Assistant Emergency Coordinators, to five who work hard, Crowder said. We went from about 10 attendees at a monthly meeting to averaging more than 20 per meeting and growing every month. The worst to first scenario is not the stuff of fairy tales, though. Crowder's biannual report released earlier this year, reflecting on 2009, captures some of the ingredients for Hall County ARIS's remarkable turnaround and touches on goals as the organization moves ahead. If your MCOM group is looking for a blueprint for success, consider this. Starting with recruitment. Last year we saw a tremendous increase in membership, Crowder said. A better than 3 times increase in manpower is significant, but still not enough according to our tables of organization and equipment. We have a goal to reach a total of 100 operators by the end of the calendar year. They will come from the existing ham community, Crowder said, and by licensing new hams that we can encourage to become part of the MCOM community. There are more than 600 licensed radio amateurs in Hall County, and we are working on contacting each of them either through letters, email, or phone calls. Hall County ARIS also sponsors Ham Cram classes, in which prospective radio amateurs and those wanting to upgrade undergo a quick course and obtain a license in short order. In 2009, the team brought in 38 new hams and upgraded 6 more to general class from a technician. We also participated in special VE, that's volunteer examiner sessions, during which we licensed 22 technicians and upgraded 4 additional generals, Crowder said. 60 new techs and 10 generals are a significant addition to the ham community. Several more ham crams were planned by the team in 2010. We have recruited and licensed a local meteorologist, name is Brian Willard, K4BCW, to run our Skywarn. The editor of the local newspaper has joined our group, and we are making inroads to all sorts of other organizations with which to network our group. Many of our members are newly licensed hams who have skills that apply to our mission. Tom Keith, KJ4FQT. That's AEC personnel, is a retired Army Sergeant Major who brings great motivation and organization skills to the group. Mark Shockley, call KJ4EZQ. That's AEC Slant Digital Modes and Equipment, is an electronics wizard. We just added an electronics engineer to our roster as well. We're looking outside of the box, finding folks with skills we need, even if they are not hams. When we find these people, we license and train them for radio and then integrate their life skills into our program, Crowder said. Communications is as much a relationship business as it is technical, Crowder said. In his biannual report, he noted that mutual aid agreements had been negotiated and signed with 12 other ARIS groups in the Northeast Georgia region. We're actively sharing information and training with these groups. In the event of a disaster that activates us, these relationships and mutual training should help all of our groups perform to the highest standards. These agreements give us ready access to several hundred trained communicators. In addition to other ARIS groups, Hall County has reached out to the Civil Air Patrol, the Military Auxiliary Radio System, and others. In closing his biannual report, Crowder told membership that, as the emergency coordinator, I am proud of our progress in 2009 and look forward to an even better 2010. I hope that everyone in the amateur radio community will join us to see our local communities served with the best communications capabilities possible. The Worst to First saga of Hall County, Georgia, ARIS, is a great example of how radio amateurs take decisive action to fulfill our fraternity's obligation as public servants. Do you know of other organizations or operators who have taken decisive action in the MCOM arena? Please let us know, and we'll feature their stories in an upcoming column. So please drop an email to KI6SN, that's Kilo, India, 6, Sierra, November, to KI6SN at CQ-amateur-radio.com. This concludes the article by Richard Fisher. Call Kilo, India, 6, Sierra, November. We're moving along now to Kids Corner. The author is Brittany Decker, called KB1OGL. She titles this piece, Field Day 2010. What did you do? That time of year has come and gone again. The day looked forward to by young hams, individuals, parents, and children, first-timers, old-timers, clubs, and those who happened to stumble upon ham radio through a field day open to the public. Field Day is a fun day with a serious purpose. This day of practice for emergency communications is made into a fun event for all ages and interests. There are some who get together with friends to do some operating, collaborate with their local club, participate individually, have their first field day with a parent or sibling, or find a local club at a park or other public place and get interested in ham radio through this event. There are many different things to do during field day, especially if you participate with a club. Cooking, setting up, tearing down, CW, phone, GOTA, that's get on the air, logging, whatever. Many of the kids I've written about in Kids Corner so far get involved in some way during field day and have shared with me what they did over this exciting weekend. There's a commentary here from Paul Sheary, Kilo Charlie 9, Quebec Yankee Bravo, KC9QYB. Paul Sheary, relatively new to ham radio, describes his first field day. When I pictured field day, I did not picture anything of what I experienced. The first thing I did field day related was help set up the various towers and antennas that we had at our field day site. That means I spent 9 hours on Friday helping to set up for field day. Then I came back on Saturday and was there another 9 hours to operate, though I did not get in that much operating. I did manage to make 22 contacts at the GOTA station on Saturday, including contacting the legendary W1AW. Folks, this is Bob. The W1AW, Whiskey 1 Alpha Whiskey, is the station owned and operated by the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut. Continuing Paul's commentary, When I was not working the GOTA station, I was talking to people or watching other people operate. Then I got the chance to log some of the contacts that we made at the 10-meter station. 10 meters was extremely open during the entire event, and we made over 500 contacts. I was not able to stay during the entire field day. I left around 9 o'clock on Saturday evening, and I thought that was going to be it. But then my parents brought me back Sunday after church at around 11 a.m., and I walked over to an unoccupied station. I picked up that magnificent Heal Pro Plus headset and began working stations on 20 meters using one of our club calls, the call W9PIA, and managed to rack up a good 10 or so stations. And that was pretty hard considering band conditions and interference we were receiving from another station on 20 meters at the site. Next year, I plan to do a lot more operating since I won't have to worry about the GOTA station. As my first field day, I learned a few very important things. But one of the most important I learned is that in order to be successful in contests or even operating events such as field day, you have to be willing to go out of your comfort zone and do new things such as call CQ. And when answering back to another station, you have to be firm and quick to get it. I also learned many other operating skills that will help me for years to come. But the thing I will remember the most about my first field day was my first field day contact. I remember how great I felt when I made that first contact, and that was the beginning of many I will make for years to come. At our field day, we also got a lot of people using the GOTA station. We had over 60 visitors sign in, most of whom did not have a license, and got almost all of them on the GOTA station. We had 8 Cub Scouts and 2 leaders there also, and 1 public official. With a demonstration station that was set up, we also racked up bonus points for education. But the thing that made me smile the biggest was seeing a 6-year-old at the GOTA station making his first ever ham radio contact. Now we have a commentary from Megan McClellan called K5MEM. I did field day with my dad at home this year. In the past, though, I did field day on a steam-powered train. We were in a caboose on the end of the famous Texas State Railroad steam-powered train. Yes, we operated Railroad Mobile. A couple of years ago, I helped run the GOTA station with the Rock Wall Amateur Radio Club. The year we operated on the railroad was one of the most fun years that I have participated in. My family and I always tried to make field day a fun experience for everyone involved. We followed the railroad experience by operating with the Rock Wall Amateur Radio Club. I helped operate the GOTA station that year. We had a lot of fun. I was able to get some new people interested in amateur radio, and I was also able to convince some people who had not been on the air in some time. This year was my 8th field day, and we got 365 contacts operating as 1E category NTX with an IMCOM 7700 and a little generator. This year's field day was great. We had so much fun. 10 meters was surprisingly good at about 10 p.m. Central Time. I did a lot of operating. When we calculated the contacts, it came out that I made about half of the contacts, with the other half going to my mom, dad, and a friend. Now, following Megan McClellan's commentary is one by Nick Esposito called KC2ONP, and then others as well. Now, following this article, there is an announcement that Cody Anderson, KI4FUV, is named the 25th Newsline Young Ham of the Year. A 17-year-old ham from Harriman, Tennessee, has been named the 2010 Young Ham of the Year by Amateur Radio Newsline. Cody Anderson, Kilo India 4, Foxtrot Uniform Victor, is the 25th recipient of the award, which is co-sponsored by CQ Magazine, Yaesu, Vertex Standard, and Heal Sound. He was honored for combining his ham radio training and recent CPR training to help save a runner who had gone into cardiac arrest during a charity run. Anderson, who became an amateur at age 11, after listening to a VHF ham contact on a scanner and deciding to get his license, is active in public service communications as a member and vice president of the Roane County Amateur Radio Club and a local amateur radio emergency service. That's the ARIS group again. During one charity run last year, Cody was providing communications at a checkpoint when he saw a runner fall to the ground. Quoting, "One of the runners had gone past me and I noticed he fell," Cody told Newsline. "I waited just a second or two, you know, to see if he got back up. Maybe he just tripped. But then," said Cody, "I noticed he didn't get back up, so I went over to him, and by the time I got to him, he had quit breathing and went into cardiac arrest." Cody radioed in the emergency and, along with a runner who had stopped to help, began doing CPR, a skill he had learned just a few months earlier through a course given by his radio club. Because of Cody's quick action, both on the radio and in providing first aid, the runner survived. Cody is also active in scouting, where he helps teach merit badge courses and introduces scouts to ham radio, and in technology projects for his radio club and the ARIS group. A 2010 graduate of Rockwood High School in nearby Rockwood, Tennessee, Cody is planning this fall to attend his local community college and then go from there to Tennessee Tech, where he intends to major in computer science. He says he will always make room for ham radio, noting that Tennessee Tech has an active ham club. Cody was scheduled to receive his Young Ham of the Year award at the Huntsville Ham Fest in August, along with a plaque provided by Dave Bell, W6AQ, president of DBA Entertainment in Hollywood. Cody will receive additional prizes from the award's corporate co-sponsors. CQ Magazine provides each YHOTY winner with a week of space camp in Huntsville, Alabama, and an invitation to write an article on a ham radio-related activity with which he or she is involved. Vertex Standard pays for the winner's trip to Huntsville and provides a gift of Yaesu equipment, and Heal Sound provides a ham radio-related gift as well. Newsline hosts a dinner for the winner and his or her family, along with representatives of the sponsors and members of the selection committee who are present. The Young Ham of the Year Award recognizes outstanding service to the nation or community, or the betterment of the state of the art in communications through amateur radio, by a licensed ham age 18 or younger. The award was first presented in 1986 to Sean Wakefield, called WK5P, in recognition of the program's 25th anniversary this year. Organizers were planning to collect and present updates on as many past winners as possible. Congratulations to Cody Anderson, Kilo India 4, Foxtrot Uniform Victor, being named the 25th Newsline Young Ham of the Year. Ladies and gentlemen, for the CQ Magazine cover for September 2010 is a very, very nice picture of a gentleman and a young boy. It states here on the cover, Jim Stone, WB7CQS, and grandson Kenny Stone, KE7GXX, in Jackson, Wyoming. Here's a little bit more about that picture. There are three generations of hams in the Stone family of Jackson, Wyoming. 14-year-old Kenny is Kilo Echo 7 Golf X-Ray X-Ray. His grandfather, Jim, in whose shack their photo was taken, is Whiskey Bravo 7 Charlie Quebec Sierra. And his parents are Scott, November 7, November Hotel Kilo, and Kathy, Kilo Bravo 7, Quebec Kilo Hotel. Jim has been licensed since the mid-1970s, motivated by an interest in electronics and some friends who were hams. He eventually got involved in RACES, Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, which led to his spending 12 years as Teton County, Wyoming Emergency Management Coordinator. He has since retired from that position to devote more time to the family Western Wear business. Jim says emergency communications is still his primary ham radio interest, even though he hasn't been as active in it recently. You may be able to retire from it, he notes, but you don't get away from it. Jim says he got his son Scott into emergency management, and then he got his license, which surprised me, and then his wife got her license, When Kenny got his tech license 4 years ago, Scott upgraded to general at the same time. Kenny was 9 years old when he earned his license and was the youngest ham in Wyoming at the time, according to Jim. He says his grandson is very interested in computers, but his interest in ham radio also caught him by surprise. Just out of the blue, his dad said he was working on his license, Jim recalled. Jim says that Kenny, who is starting ninth grade this fall, does some radio control on ham frequencies, but mostly the family uses two meters for communicating between vehicles when off-roading and traveling together. I value my ham license immensely, Jim concluded. It takes a lot of work to get it. The cover photograph was taken by Larry Mulvihill, M-U-L-V-E-H-I-L-L, and Larry's call is WB2ZPI. Well, gee whiz, lest I go further, I better back up and give you some information about ham fests and other special event activities going on in the month of September. As I said here this early morning in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, which is my location, or QTH, it's September 1, would you believe it? And guess what's coming up the eastern seaboard? Good old hurricanes. Here we go. The following ham fests are slated for September. September 11, 58th Annual W9DXCC Convention. That's at Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Also on September 11th, the Virginia Beach Ham Fest, Virginia Beach Convention Center, and of course, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Where else? September 12th, Western Connecticut Ham Fest. It's at the Edmond Town Hall, Newtown, Connecticut. And on September 18th, the Rhode Island Little Roadie Amateur FM Repeater Service Fall Flea Market and Auction. It's going to be held at the VFW Post 6342 at Forest Dale. That's actually North Smithfield, Rhode Island. And one more here of some note for September. On September 18th, Micro Hams, Ham Radio Digital Conference. It's being held at the Microsoft Campus in Redmond, Washington. And if you're listening around the frequencies, there are the following special event stations to be airing in September. Kilo Alpha 1, Kilo Delta from commemoration of the P.T. Barnum 200th birthday, Bethel, Connecticut. Station call KC2RA, Kilo Charlie 2, Romeo Alpha from Kings County Repeater Association. It's the annual 9/11 Memorial Event, a short walk from Ground Zero, New York, New York. Special event station W2FHA, Whiskey 2 Foxtrot Hotel Alpha, from the Town of German Flats Living History Weekend, Mohawk, New York. That's being featured by the Fort Herkimer Amateur Radio Association. That's going to be on September 25th, various frequencies. Next one, WA3COM, Whiskey Alpha 3 Charlie Oscar Mike from West Alexander Fair, West Alexander, Pennsylvania, sponsored by the Washington Amateur Communications Amateur Radio Club. It's the days of September 9th through 12th, various frequencies. Special event K4MIA, Kilo 4 Mike India Alpha, commemorating National POW Slant MIA Recognition Day from the state of Florida. Those folks will be on the air between September 15 and 19 on various ham radio frequencies. And we also have one from Canada, VC3M, Victor Charlie 3 Mike, celebrating Mississauga Amateur Radio Club's 25th anniversary, Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. Those good folks will be on the air between September 18th and October 18th on all HF bands, except no WARC bands, of course. So there you have the announcements for not only the special event stations, but of course the ham fests or nice meetings all along the way throughout the United States. I hope some of you who are able to go and do will pick up one of these events and enjoy yourself in the process. Well, as I cruise toward the end of this recording, I come upon the 2010 CQ Worldwide DX contest. The contest has two portions. One is for phone or voice communications. That's going to be October 30-31. And the other one is for CW or Morse code, November 27, 28. All kinds of details relative to what the CQ Worldwide DX contest requires, not only the objectives, what the bands are, the type of competition, etc. But this is the really, really big ones that we reported on for the 2009 results just earlier in this recording. So here it is, another year and another opportunity to either participate in if you have equipment and a license, or at least to listen into. You'll get all kinds of signals coming into that shortwave band receiver. Give it a try. You'll probably enjoy yourself just listening if you can't participate. You know, once in a while, you hear me say DX. I used it just a few moments ago in announcing the CQ Worldwide DX contest. DX is actually ham speak for any contacts an amateur station makes with other amateur licensed operators in any other country outside of the contiguous 48 United States. It could be Alaska, it could be Hawaii, it could be Puerto Rico, but those are DX stations by definition, along with, of course, all the other amateur radio stations throughout the entire world being DX to us in the United States. This DX column is authored by Carl Smith, N4AA, November 4 Alpha Alpha. He titles it, "The Magic Band is Alive." We'll just give you parts of this one. What an interesting time for anyone who could get on 6 meters, the Magic Band. The team that was active from Palestine as E4X made history for sure. Look at the charts elsewhere in this column. Yes, it does show 6,545 QSOs on 6 meters. And folks, QSO, QSO, is another ham speak signal for two-way conversations. A first ever NA to Palestine contact was made between K4CIA, Bill McDowell in North Carolina, and E4X, many others in North America, also made contact with E4X on 6. But Bill was the first. Congratulations, Bill. With a total of over 80,000 Qs, Palestine should be well down on the next most wanted list published in the DX magazine. Literally hundreds of contacts between North America and Europe were reported during the June-July timeframe. It seems 6 meters has taken the front-center spot away from the high-frequency bands. There were more cluster DX spots for 6 meters than for 20 meters. 6 meters is getting a lot of attention around the world. A primarily 6-meter expedition to the Gambia and special permission for Thailand amateurs to operate on 6 during the July CQ Worldwide VHF contest, plus what we have written above, are just a few examples of the interest in the Magic Band. Dennis, K7BV, has been going on a 6-meter expedition with the Caribbean Central America area the last few years, too. As this is being written, the government of the Netherlands has made some progress toward creating 2 new counters for ham radio in the Netherlands Antilles. According to news reports in early July, the effective date will be October 10, 2010. If all goes as planned, the islands of Curaçao and Saint Martin will become the 2 new ones on the DXCC list. The other islands of Bonaire, Saint Eustatius, and Saba will remain as special municipalities. There is still some discussion about the status of Bonaire due to its distance from the others. I have confidence in those who are in the decision-making process to decide in due time what should happen. However, in view of the almost certainty that Curaçao and Saint Martin will be the new countries, many people have already announced their intention to conduct first-day operations from there. It should prove interesting with that many stations on the air at the same time from the same relatively small area. The author goes on to conclude, this being September, we can look forward to the upcoming contest season. Hopefully, all those improvements we've made to our stations and antenna systems will pay off in the months ahead. Will we have propagation on 10 meters? Only time will tell. Will 160 still be active enough to justify all the effort we put into those new low-band antennas, beverages, etc.? We sure hope so. It's signed 73, Carl, N4, Alpha, Alpha. Well, folks, that just about winds it up for me in this month's reading of CQ Magazine for September 2010 here on the Courage Handy Ham System. CQ is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The editor, we thank Richard S. Mawson, W2VU, and also the managing editor, Gail M. Sheehan, K2RED. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512. You can email them at handyham@courage.org. Again, the website, www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, about 50 miles southeast of Boston, right on Buzzards Bay, the gateway to Cape Cod. We're looking forward to a hurricane warning this coming day or two, so I hope you're enjoying your weather, because ours may not be too nice for the next few days. 73, thanks again for listening along with me, N1BLF.